set on me. I won't sit back, stand idly by, watch the heart of my nation die. Oh, not me, don't tread on me. Don't tread on my Bible, don't tread on my guts, don't you tread on my faith in God's only Son. Don't tread on me, don't tread on me. Better leave me alone, cause I wanna be free, and I damn sure fight for my liberty. I'm telling you, brother, don't tread on me. Time has come, gonna take a stand, spread these words all across the land, from sea to sea, don't tread on me. So tell your neighbors, tell all your friends, gonna see that eagle flying high again. You better believe, don't tread on me. Don't tread on my Bible, don't tread on my guns, don't you tread on my faith in God's only Son. Don't tread on me, don't tread on me. Better leave me alone, cause I wanna be free, and I'll damn sure fight for my liberty. I'm telling you, brother, don't tread on me. Yeah, I'm telling you, brother, don't tread on me.
Hey, everybody, welcome back into the show. This is the second hour here on this Friday, July the 18th, 2025 edition, your Defending Fathers with Chuck and Randy Bishop here on the Patriot Voice Radio Network. Those markers are in for the podcast. Again, you guys can tell people to go to the show's website, yourdefendingfathers.com, click on podcast and listen on demand anytime you want. You don't just have to listen live 9 to noon Monday through Friday. Although we appreciate you doing that, lots of people have to work. So listen to the podcast. And in the second hour, hour two, segment one, hour two, segment two, every Friday is the before mentioned absolutely fantastic historian that we have every Friday dedicated to the show. Pastor Chatfield's on the line with us. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Yeah, thank you for that exaggerated introduction. I appreciate it. There you go.
Ethnicities, alliances, and the lead up to World War One. This is what, 1914, 1915, those kind of years you're talking today?
Yes, 1914 and earlier. And this is one of these things that I have a hard time with this. I keep wanting to have to back up. In other words, you got to get the background in all this. And the more you back up, the more complicated it gets. Okay. A lot of you have heard. You've heard on Sunday mornings. And he also does one of our advertisements. John Luca, who is a Romanian, former major in the Romanian Communist Army, who came to America in the early 1990s and now loves America. And he married his wife, obviously. His name is Alice. She was Hungarian. They lived in Romania, but he was Romanian. She was Hungarian. They both speak three or four languages. They can read probably six or seven languages. That's just who they are. That's kind of in a microcosm what Europe was like and still to some degree what it is like. Back in the turn of the last century, 1900, there were all sorts of different ethnicities in Europe that were at odds with each other. Okay, I've divided this up into four or five separate groups. There were the Slavs, the Slavic groups, the Germanic groups, the Romantic or the Romance language groups. Then there were a set of people like the Greeks, the Finns, and the Hungarians. It's interesting. Hungary is in Central Europe. Finland's up in Northern Europe. But their language is very similar. The language of Hungarians is totally different than the language of the Romanians. Even though their countries were close, are close. And it's nothing like the Germans, more like the Finnish. And the more I speak to, say, John and Alice, and I study World War One and what led to World War One. It's easy for me to say, and this is what we are taught, that it was triggered by the assassination of Archduke Francis Ferdinand of Austria-Hungary in Sarajevo, June 28th, 1914. That was the spark that started the war. But the complications of all the things that happened are go way deeper than that. I mean, that's what started the war. But there was, first of all, a lot of different ethnicities. And we'll talk about that in the start of World War One and how that applies today after the break.
Absolutely. Perfect spot for a break. I am Trucker Randy. He is Pastor Chatfield. Almost said it backwards. Short break from our sponsors. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Ian Murphy from the Iron Pig Smokehouse in downtown Gaylord. Join me every Tuesday at 10 a.m. with Trucker Randy for an update on all things happening at the Iron Pig. We're open 7 days a week and serving breakfast Saturdays and Sundays. You can order online anytime for takeout, curbside, and delivery at ironpigsmoke.com. And be sure to keep up with our legal battle against the health department by subscribing to our podcast at fuelcasttv.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, CEO of MyPillow. I support this show, and I would like to offer you our biggest discounts for listening. So please go to our website, MyPillow.com, and put in the promo code at the end of this message to get the biggest discounts. Again, thanks for listening, and God bless.
Thanks, Mike. Folks, go to MyPillow.com and enter the promo code TRUCKERRANDY, or call 800-654-9659.
Hey everybody, it's Trucker Randy, the Yo-Yo Diet King. I have literally lost hundreds of pounds in my life. Slim Fast in the 90s, Nutrisystem in 2000, South Beach, Superfoods, they all worked in the short term, only to gain it all back, plus some. Now that I'm 65, I really wanted to find a program that would increase my metabolism to burn my belly fat, bring my hormones back to my younger days without any exercising. Then I met Missy of MyPure Health Solutions. She explained how her program does exactly what I was looking for. Go to TruckerRandyHealth.com, follow my journey with Missy, and see that I dropped 22 pounds of body fat in the first 14 days without exercising and eating real foods. Again, go to TruckerRandyHealth.com and schedule a free consultation, or call Missy at 269-964-4044. Let Missy change your metabolism just like she's changed mine. Do it today.
Life is a wonderful journey, from fresh beginnings and future adventures to all the best life has to offer. Along this incredible journey, you want to safeguard what's most important to you. Hi, I'm Tristan Cole, your local Farm Bureau insurance agent, and I'm always nearby to help protect you and your loved ones along the way. Let's talk about your journey and protecting what matters most. Call me at 231-533-6489 or visit me online at TristanCole.com. We're Farm Bureau Insurance, Michigan's insurance company.
Remembers their moment, the moment Granddad handed down his old rifle. At Curtis Gunsmithing in Petoskey, we respect traditions. We also know that that old gun might not be in the same shape it was when Granddad gave it to you. Mr. Tom Curtis, the gun doctor, will take good care of old Betsy. He'll get her shined up and looking good as new. Curtis Gunsmithing is the one that you can trust with your family traditions. Give us a call at 231-838-5571. And as the gun doctor says, anything but an Abrams tank.
Hey, everybody, welcome back into the show. Perfect spot for that break, Pastor Chatfield, and the alliances and different things happening leading up to World War One. Let's pick it up right there where you left off.
All right, so there was two sets of alliances here. Basically, we call that there were major powers in each and they were lesser powers in each. On the one side, there was what we call the central powers. That would be made up of the Austrian-Hungarian Empire. At one time, Austria-Hungary, it was an empire. They still had kings before World War I. Okay. And while the Austrians spoke German, the Hungarians spoke Hungarian, okay? But the Austrian-Hungarian Empire was aligned with Germany. Now, Germany itself had only become a nation in 1870. Within Germany, there were you have like the Prussians and the Bavarians, and there were different parts of Germany that spoke German, would call themselves German, but they were not one nation. Otto von Bismarck in 1870 and Metternich before that, to those that know European history, they were big leaders in the unification of Germany. And then eventually, Germany became a nation and wanted to expand its borders and include all German-speaking people. That's between World War I and World War II. That was the drive of Hitler. And not just Hitler, but a lot of they wanted people that spoke German to be a part of Germany. Okay, and then the other major of this called the Central Powers was the Ottoman Empire, which was Turkey, the Ottoman Turks, and they controlled much of the Middle East. All right, now when Archduke Francis Ferdinand of Austria-Hungary was assassinated, he was assassinated by a Serbian who was a part of this weird group known as the Black Hand. He was a Serbian nationalist. So Serbia was aligned with Russia. Now, Russia was part of what we would call, I've probably already lost you here, the Triple Entente, a group of three nations that were aligned with major nations, France, okay, Great Britain, and Russia. All were aligned with each other against Austria-Hungary, Germany, and the Ottoman Empire. Then you had a bunch of smaller nations that were aligned with each. For instance, the Central Powers. You had the three major, but then Bulgaria joined them. Different groups that, like Saudi Arabia, that was opposed to the Ottoman Turks. And Azerbaijan, Darfur. I mean, there are a lot of groups that kind of aligned themselves with the Germans. They didn't like the Russians. On the other hand, there were even more countries. When the war broke out, Austria-Hungary just declared war on Serbia. And because Serbia was an ally of Russia, Russia declared war on Austria-Hungary. And then because France and Great Britain were allies with Russia, they declared war on Germany, and all the smaller nations just kind of stepped in line with the other ones. When it comes to the Allied powers or the Triple Entente, Italy, which was originally neutral, they joined the alliance. Japan joined the alliance. Eventually, the United States did late in the war, 1917, joined the Allied cause. Serbia, that was they were where it all started. They were enemies with Austria-Hungary. They aligned with Russia so Russia would help them. Greece eventually joined. Romania, Portugal, Montenegro, even China, Brazil, Siam, and the Western European powers, the Triple Entente powers, the allies, the alliance. All of their imperialistic holdings overseas joined. So you had, that was one of the major causes of the war, was this vast network of alliances that when something happened, each country was under treaty obligation to join in the war. And they had a lot of issues just regularly. I said this in church last week in Sunday school, and I says, and it's just the way it is. Maybe listeners don't want to hear this. Hey, everybody, you know what's in the United States of America? You know what's in our future? You know what's in our future? War. What do you mean? How do you know? You know something? I don't know. I'm just looking back at history. War is a part of history. George Washington understood that, and he said in his farewell address that, you know, we have to be prepared for war. We don't want war. If there was a country on earth that really wants to be above and beyond war, and we don't, and I hear people, even good people that I agree with on most things, when the United States bombed Iran, they said, this is not our war. And what's going on between the Ukraine and Russia, this is not our war, not our war. I get it. And I'm America first guy. But the earth is pretty small. And President Washington said that our foreign policy should be lined up with justice and enlightened self-interest. Justice and enlightened self-interest. Just like what President Trump said the other day. He said, yeah, he told his wife, I had a good talk with Vladimir. He calls him by his first name. You know, President. His wife said, yeah, then he goes and bombs more cities. And Trump says, he did? Yeah, we just got news. He bombed more cities. And so President Trump, he's trying to bring peace. That's what he's trying to do. But there's long-standing anger, conflicts around the world that nobody can bring peace except the Lord Jesus Christ when he comes again. And because he's the Prince of Peace, only he ultimately can bring ultimate, long-lasting peace. And by the way, even he has to do it with a rod of iron. I mean, that is the way it works. Until sin-cursed man is removed from this curse, and we're not so cursed with sin, war is inevitable. I'm teaching through Genesis on Wednesday night, and in Genesis chapter 4, when Cain was born, Eve said, I've received a man from the Lord. She kind of thought that Cain would be the first, that he would be the Messiah, the promised one, which was first promised in Genesis chapter 3 and verse 15. But we find out, in the end, the firstborn, Cain, murders the secondborn, Abel. So that isn't that just a precursor, a prelude to the world's history, when the oldest son, oldest person, the oldest child murders the second oldest child? That's the nature of the world. That's why we have to put on realistic glasses. And so World War One, you had all these things. You had a rise in these alliances. You had a rise in nationalism, which is good to an extent. To an extent. It got so far out of hand in between World War One and World War Two. But it was, I mean, everybody loves their country. That we call patriotism. But some people want to say when patriotism goes beyond just love of country and hatred of other countries, then it's known as nationalism. I don't like it when people have the power to define things, but hyper-nationalism I would be opposed to. Hyper. In other words, where we're saying United States of America is the greatest country on earth, every other country is scum, and we are destined to rule the world. I mean, that reminds me of what Hitler said when he said, today, sure. Germany, yeah. Tomorrow, the world.
The world, yeah.
So nationalism, yes, moderate, but we'd prefer to call it patriotism. But before World War One, a rise in nationalism. And then after, in between the world wars, especially when Hitler came to power, extreme nationalism in Germany. And by the way, Treaty of Paris, the Treaty of Versailles after World War One, which was in France, it rubbed Germany's nose in it. It really was vindictive toward the Germans. It said that they had to bear the war guilt, said they had to make all these vast, huge reparations that they were not going to be able to do. And it, when you push somebody down that hard, and Woodrow Wilson didn't want to do it. I mean, he thought it was too harsh, but he kind of went along because he didn't have a choice. Hey, Germany, they were in the dirt. And when somebody rises up and says, hey, Germany was totally mistreated by the Allies after World War, after what they called at the time the Great War, and the Treaty of Versailles was completely unjust, and we are a great people, and we will rise again. Let's stand up and build our country, and let's stand against those who oppose us, especially those evil Jews. That's in essence. He, You know, obviously I don't believe that, listeners. But that spur, he blamed all of Germany's power upon their enemies, and especially the Jews. The Jews were the source of all wars and problems in Europe. And too many Germans believed that lie. And then we get World War II. And so an extreme nationalism. And then there was something that goes before World War I. It's called imperialism. And it's kind of tied to nationalism, where a lot of European countries, the most powerful ones, especially, wanted world colonies. They wanted colonies all over the world. You had Great Britain in India that dominated India. And you had a lot of the European countries kind of split up China and had spheres of influence in China. Even us, some people would accuse us of being imperialists, which I don't think is really fair. But we did have, we controlled the Philippines. And we were controlling Cuba and Guam, which we still control. But, I mean, so there's this imperialism and then militarism, which is the, you know, just building up a military above and beyond what you might need. Is there a limit on how much money, let's say the United States or any country, but the United States should spend on the military? I would say yes, there's a limit. Now, I want a strong military. Don't be mistaken. But not, you know, we need a military to protect ourselves, to defend ourselves. We're not here to take over the world. That's not our, we're a republic, not an empire. And we have to remember that. And we tried to stay out of World War I, but we were drug into it. And there's a lot of things that happened. And so, but there was this terrible group of events, the one after another, kind of just drew us into World War One. And then after the Treaty of Versailles, after World War One ended, truly, it has been said, I think it's a pretty accurate statement, World War Two began right after World War One. In other words, as World War One ended, World War Two began, especially the Treaty of Versailles. It was too much, too far, too vindictive on the Germans. And you create an atmosphere in Germany where they would believe somebody like Hitler, where they were looking for somebody to help restore German pride and told them things that they could believe in. As much as you don't like Hitler, of course we don't. He did stir up a good portion of the German people, and they seized power, and he did restore German pride, yes, way too far, and that led to World War II. So that's kind of... I'm available for questions.
Yeah, well, the first question that comes to mind is, for point of clarification, when we finally was, like you mentioned, you know, dragged into this war, who was our allies? Who were we with? Major countries we were standing with and fighting against?
We were with the Russians, the French, and the British. Those were the three major powers. We were against the Ottoman Empire, which is Turkey, and they controlled a lot of territory at that time. The Ottoman Empire, Austria-Hungary. Austria-Hungary was one nation. It was called the Austrian-Hungarian Empire, and then Germany.
Germany, got it. Very interesting. Good place for a break. Bomb the Hour News. We'll be right back.
Is Michigan News Source, Michigan's